Permanent Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Permanent Footprint, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com on this October the 10th on the East Coast, as well as in the Central Time Zone, still October the 9th on the West Coast. And before bringing tonight's guest on board, I want to just mention a couple of little things. Seems that the media is still not reporting the fact that a federal judge has ordered Barack Obama to produce evidence that he was born in the United States, that he is a citizen and has a certificate of live birth, as well as naturalization papers or something to show that he is a citizen. As well as, I'm trying to remember what the other document is. You know, it just gets so cumbersome when a person is not from the country. How do they make it look like they're from the country? You know, it doesn't really matter. The judge has ruled in Phil Berg's favor. He is the attorney bringing about this suit. The problem is that so far, though, they've been able to sort of string this thing out. And then now we've got some other issues. There's a group called ACORN that's rounding up people to register to vote. And in Cleveland, Ohio, there's one individual was asked to register something like 72 times. I guess once is not enough. You got to make sure. It matches the 72 virgins. I wonder if each time he registers, he gets a virgin when he goes to heaven. Very interesting. That's a double entendre there with Obama's Muslim references, which have been Freudian slips on the news, particularly the one he had recently with George Stephanopoulos from ABC. He refers to his Muslim religion and then says that was a slip of the tongue. Interesting. Very, very interesting. There's many, many slips of the tongue, in fact. He had a few with Larry Sinclair, I understand, both on a crack pipe as well as on Mr. Sinclair's private member. And that has been whitewashed, but it resulted, with the aid of Bo Biden, it resulted in the vice presidential nomination of another Biden, Joseph Biden, the state senator from Delaware. It's very interesting how all these coincidences are playing out. Now, there's some more information. I think because of my hit piece on Obama, which was parts 3 and 4 of the Three Stooges Go to Washington, that people actually started doing some research. And it turns out that Tony Resco had borrowed about $3.5 million from a man from the Middle East. And, of course, Resco himself, Antoine Resco, is a Syrian. And so he became a partner with Obama in some dealings. Resco borrowed $3.5 million from somebody, and out of nowhere, Obama buys a $2 million house and sells a property to Resco, the next door lot to this $2 million house he buys, and it sold for $1.6 million. Well, that's roughly $3.6 million. So we don't know what the exact figures are, but it's strange that within 3 weeks of Resco borrowing that money, that this deal goes down with Obama. But Obama says that it's because of book sales. His wonderful book that's just filled with all this truth, which I totally debunked in my piece on the Three Stooges. And we're not finished with this yet. I'm going to keep beating this drum about the phony identities of these people, the phony genealogies. And let's not forget, John McCain is not an American either. And I challenge him to prove that he was born in a hospital that did not exist in 1936. I have a problem with that. And you should have a problem with that, too. These people are warmongers, drug dealers, pedophiles, pornographers, you name it. And they're all involved in the same things together. It doesn't matter how long they've been in politics. They're under someone else's control. They're at someone else's mercy, and they're trying to ram these people down our throats, and it's time it stops. With that, I'm going to bring on tonight's guest, and I'm going to preface his introduction with a brief statement, and that's that he received a threat of sorts himself. This is a photograph he received on his computer a few days ago, and he's written an article about it, posted the article, and I had the opportunity to do some research of this photograph, because there's not much you can do when your computer kicks in, a computer program starts running and basically takes over your computer, and a picture appears. And it's construed to be a threatening warning. We could construe that this was a death threat of sorts. And I can tell you the tone of the picture was that. But the fact that somebody is actually sending this out and taking over someone's computer, I think we're going to talk about who this was that did this tonight. It's up to tonight's guest if he wants to go that far. But it goes hand in hand with an investigation that I have been doing into rampant corruption across the internet perpetrated by what appears to be the intelligence agencies, the NSA, probably the DIA, the DEA, you name it. Any of the three-letter agencies are behind this. It all leads back to Herndon, Virginia, McLean, Virginia, the same internet companies, a lot of Dallas, Texas, Houston, Texas is in there too. A few companies in California, but it's always the same people doing this. And we've been tracking these emails because people are being accused of sending spam and phishing emails, which are, it's organized crime, it's corruption, trying to steal your private identity, your private information, and compromising it, and stealing from you. And we're going to talk about that a little bit tonight. We didn't really plan anything specific, but this is a new development. With that, I would like to welcome back to Evident Footprints for the trillionth time, and that's a resonant number with the amount of dollars flying around these days, Mr. Ken Adachi. Ken, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Don. I appreciate being on with you again.
Well, it's nice to have you here. How are things going since you got this photograph I mentioned?
Yeah, okay, nothing greatly unusual had transpired since that time. I believe in the philosophy of of always exposing threats rather than be silent about it, because I think it's, in the past, when I've encountered something along these lines, I usually put it up on my website immediately, and I also contact friends, et cetera. I send emails around to a number of people, because I don't think it's ever wise for someone who's being, or someone's attempting to intimidate in this way, to be quiet about it. The wisest thing is to yell and expose whatever it is. In this case, yeah, it's I haven't had a problem in quite a while. I'll tell you the instances that I can recall in which I, because of something I put on my website, I was threatened. Approximately, I'm trying to remember now, might have been 4 or 5 years ago, somewhere like that. I had posted an article from Noreen Gosh. Noreen Gosh is the mother of Johnny Gosh. And her story has to do with the abduction of her son when he was 12 years old. He was a newspaper boy in Indiana, I think. And anyway, he wound up being abducted by what's called the Finders, which is a CIA child abduction operation. He was traumatized, abused, mind controlled, etc. So anyway, it had to do with the mayor of the town that Noreen had lived in, I think had just died, or recently died, and she
put together. The mayor died.
Yeah, I think that's what I recall, because you know he was involved in the case, mm-hmm. and he was aware of what was really going on behind the scenes, but you know he was afraid to do anything to help.
Now, for the listeners out there that aren't aware of what this is, that we're talking about a kidnapping of a young boy taken into a pedophile ring, basically.
Yeah, this occurred in the 80s, and at the time he was about 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So she had put together this article, and she also talked about the chief of police of that that city. I think it was Des Moines. Yeah, that's I think it was Des Moines. He was involved in this case too. He was involved in the abuse side of it. And so she named the mayor, she named the police chief, et cetera. She had done that before. And so that was the article that I put up. It's not anything that I penned. It was something that she had put together. But because I try to get that information, I think it was Ted Gunderson who probably sent it to me. I put up on my website. And the very next day in the evening, sometime in the evening, my post office box was broken into. The glass was broken. And I had quite a bit of mail. It was my wife had discovered this. I didn't go to the post. She stopped by the post office around 10-ish or so at night. And, the box was broken into. The glass was on the floor. So there was some mail in there. Naturally, she had a key she could open. So she took out the remaining mail. But I had no idea what was taken until time went by. Some people contacted me. Hey, I sent you a letter, 6 weeks ago. I haven't heard from you, whatever it was. So that was one way. But the other thing we discovered is that a bank statement was taken. We didn't know it at the time, but it was. And then a bunch of bogus charges were, put on our bank. So whoever broke into the box had, somehow managed just using the bank account number itself, ran off a bunch of charges against us. So in that case, I feel it that was directed, that was a response because of the posting the article from Noreen Gosh. I'm absolutely confident of it. It happened immediately the next day, and those folks, meaning the satanic crowd that is connected with this, because they're also in bed, with government, it is a CIA domestic operation, the Finders, et cetera. So I guess they were just unhappy that, this, particularly this guy, I think, maybe the police chief. I'm not sure, but that's what makes sense to me. And so that was one occasion. In other occasions, I was sent email in which I was threatened. There was an article I put up about Princess Diana being murdered. Again, this is 3 years ago, perhaps, or so, and somebody who wanted to look like he was from British intelligence essentially was, making very, very broad threats about, we're not going to talk about Prince Charles this way, and blah, blah, blah. So whenever something like that happens, I put it up on my website right away, and that's what I did in this case. Now, I've had occasions in which I had email taken out of my inbox, and often it's many months worth of email. That's happened on 6 or 7 occasions. But it hasn't happened in quite a while. I haven't really been harassed that way for I remember when I first started to post Don Cross stuff in 2002, I had a lot of occasions of they, you know, sabotaged and just wiped out emails from my inbox. And then for the last, it seems for 2 or 3 years, I really, there was one thing, I put a thing up about JFK, William Greer, the driver of the limo, was actually one of the main assassins. What I did is I got, somebody sent me a copy of the Zapruder film, and I made individual, stills of the driver, putting a 45 on his right shoulder, with his left hand, and he turns around, looks at Kennedy, fires, hits him in the head, and turns around to continue to drive. He slowed down to almost a complete stop.
Well, anyway,
you can see it easy. It's quite easy to see it. So I took it a step further. I made an individual, you know, freeze frame of the action so you can see a still picture. And I had that up on my website for 2 days with no problems, but then I sent it to Jeff Rentz, and the minute I did, within a minute, that whole folder that that file is in was just wiped off my hard drive, as well as wiped off the my server's hard drive. It happened all within a matter of seconds. I saw the screen kind of flashing and doing strange things, and then I just had a white page there. So that was perhaps a year and a half ago, two years ago, something like that. But since then, there hasn't been, until this most recent thing, and what had happened is that my Photoshop, I knew what was open on my computer. I went to the kitchen to get something to eat, and I came back to the computer. And the Photoshop program was opened, and there was this picture sitting on the screen there, this guy that I, you know, being, you know, stomped on and subdued. And I, of course, because I just recently, like that morning and the day before, I just recently had added more material from James Casbolt's book. You know, the only logical thing is it has to do with the Casbolt material, and that was a little bit of a threat. So I sent it around. I sent it to you, and you did some checking for me, and you also got a, took a psychic reading on what you got, and it made sense what you got, since MI6 is the British intelligence that James Casbolt worked with and worked for. They're obviously monitoring, you know, everything he's doing. And, you know, if I'm going to be putting up stuff about his material, then naturally they're going to be looking at that. So it appears that it was definitely related to that. And you mentioned you saw that the NSA and Homeland Security apparently was involved in it as well. And I did
We can actually back that up in a sense. If you want me to disclose that,
I'm not interested in protecting them. I don't see this as a big deal threat because I'm reposting, material that James Casbolt has already put up on his own website. I'm not originating anything here, so. I think it's rather dumb, what's the point? If they want to take it down, then I'm sure they have the ability to take down James Casbolt's website, so it seems to me it was just a rash decision somebody made. Yeah, sure.
But it's what's interesting is what they did and how they did it, okay? Mm-hmm. And I think we could share this with the audience because... this is probably happening to people every day of the week. They get all kinds of spam email. And it's one thing if you're getting it from a bank. You know, look at what the banks are doing today. Does it surprise you that you're getting this crap from the banks?
Oh, yeah.
and that's even if it's from the banks. This can be just people phishing that want to scam us as well as the banks who are also scamming us. So... It's one thief trying to steal from another is how I see it. and or just ordinary citizens out there that are minding their own business. In this case, you got a picture. Let's just explain this, and so people can visualize this. It basically ran your Photoshop program. It opened up. It ran the program. It had an action built into it. Now, you were wondering how this occurred, and you had posted this and described what had occurred and said anyone that could help you, you would be interested in what they can pick up or anyone out there in the computer world. Well, I don't consider myself any expert in computers, but I'm learning some things. You know, I'm following this spam and this phishing stuff, and I'm coming up with some really interesting facts about who's behind all of this stuff. And I think the listening audience would really find this interesting, and especially people in college. People in the computer industry are going to find this very interesting. People that buy software from a major manufacturer need to know that this is being done. And we can prove this. And we can prove it because the picture that, you know, they say a picture says 1,000 words. Well, this picture says 1,000 words plus 3 links. Okay. And the links go to websites, and it has to do with a particular kind of file hidden in the picture. Okay? Now, when most people, when they get a photo, a JPEG or a TIFF or a GIF or a BMP, regardless of what type of file it is, if it's a graphic image file, normally they think it's just something to look at. And you can open up these files, and you can actually inspect the contents of the file. And it's there's a pretty simple way to do it, and without going into a lot of detail. In the process of doing that, I had actually shown you basically some references to the fact that Photoshop had been used and referred to numerous times within the document. You recall seeing that. In the snippets that I sent you.
Yep.
What I noticed some what appeared to be URLs, okay? These are web addresses taking one to a specific page on a website. And what I noticed also was that these were XMP files, which are extensible metadata protocol. An XMP file basically will perform they sent the XMP file embedded in this photograph. It took over your control, the control of your computer. It caused your Photoshop program to launch and post this image on your desktop, much to your surprise, because you didn't open it yourself. It just did this automatically. So it's an invasion of your privacy. It's got to be a felony. Amongst other things, what else went on while this thing is in your computer? Is it leaving a Trojan in there? Is it leaving a virus in there? Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there are a lot of things. There are laws against this. This is the point I'm trying to make.
Yep.
Okay. I sent it to you, and I sent a copy to myself, and when I got the copy back, boy, it identified the URLs right away. They were underlined, and they were actually in the same font, but they were colorized now. They stood out. You could see it. And I said, let me look at this. Well, without causing the thing to go into my operating system, I was able to take the address, the specific address, without the instruction at the end of the address, if you get my meaning. I shortened the address to the basic website. And it took me to the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Very interesting. And we have a whole suite of offices listed, as well as phone numbers and names. Very interesting. So basically, this was sent from MIT. Okay? What does MIT do? Well, they do a lot of military, a lot of undercover computer, electronic, you name it, technology type of work for the Pentagon. Okay?
Right.
Okay, so you can assume the NSA is involved, the CIA is involved, and they felt that they had to do this from MIT. Or did someone from MIT take this upon themselves to do it? I doubt it. I seriously doubt it. But now we have names and we have addresses and phone numbers, and we can prove from within the document itself that it was sent from there. But they didn't do this alone. They did this with the help of Adobe, the company that makes all these wonderful programs like Photoshop.
Yes. Right.
And they have the Adobe Reader. Okay, you can create PDFs with Adobe programs. It's very interesting. So Adobe is actually aiding and abetting a famous university, a technological university, in creating documents that issue death threats to the recipients. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Should these people get away with this? What's your feeling, Ken? Should they be getting away with this?
Well, of course not. I mean, what needs to happen in this case, I suppose, to create some sort of wrinkle is first, you have to expose them. I mean, as long as they, MIT, Adobe, can do this sort of thing without the public catching on or recognizing their participation in it, of course they'll continue to do this, but you were able to do a little snooping and you were able figure out at least two of the contributing parties involved in this. Of course, there's nothing illegal about this. These people are so accustomed to doing illegal acts that I'm sure they don't even think about it. They're just a power unto themselves. I'm sure no one said, "Oh, well, wait a minute, we can't." No, I'm sure that's the last thing that was ever mentioned. They just have become accustomed to, for what, the last 50 or 60 years, just doing whatever they wish to do, and it doesn't matter whether it's against the law or not.
Yeah,
I agree. The exposure is the way to go. If you remember a year and a half, two ago, I can't remember exactly, but Google was cooperating with Communist China in helping identify, internet users in Japan and China and so forth, and they were probably controlling websites, or they wouldn't make certain information. Enough people found out about it and started to scream, and then it didn't take long for Google to do a 180 and say, we should not have done that, and they're just back peddling, etc. But exposure is the thing, is the way to go. You've got to get this out. When people organizations cooperate with fascist and fascist agendas, they need to be exposed.
Yeah, so basically you've been threatened by a nerd.
Yeah, well, that's what I think. I mean, I don't put a lot of weight behind this because I am surprised, of course, but at the same time, I think it's because of the information which James Casbolt is supplying. That is what caused this event to take place. And it's a clear indicator that he must be saying something that they don't want the public to know. Which to me, it's counterproductive to do this, because by doing it, you're sending a telegram to the public, whoever becomes aware of this phenomena, that there must be something there I should read. So they're bringing that much more traffic to him by these sort of acts of sabotage and so forth. When they're, that's why it surprises me. I just can't believe official or supervisor who's in charge of this operation would actually okay something like this. It's really dumb to do that, because first it alerts me, And then I'm going to put it on my website right away. Then a lot of other people are going to read about it. And then somebody like you has more ability. You can start tracing these things. Now we know MIT and Adobe are involved. And you got some psychic impressions, which you may or may not want to talk about. But, I mean, it's pretty obvious who did it. I mean, it's obviously connected to the stuff from Casbolt. So if I was a reader, if I saw this, well, I'd zip over. I'd read Casbolt's stuff right away. Because obviously he has something they don't want us to read, which he does.
Mm-hmm. Well, it points us in a couple of directions because MIT is involved in a project with servers, and I won't go into a lot of detail with that, but they have a pretty not so well known project in the internet business where they're dealing with this issue of server congestion. They have a certain kind of server that eases the congestion in the traffic patterns. Well, it makes it very convenient to intercept server data if you're relieving the log jams, then your server has to be handling the information. It's got to be gathering the information. That's one thing that they do. Now, the fact that they have a company that's setting this up, and these, remember, these are URLs. These instructions inside this document are taking people to specific websites to perform these functions. So the two companies are working together. Okay? That's definite. They show up as participants within the document. This document was created by both, and their information is in there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, a lot of people wondered, how the heck do you find that? Okay, it's not important at this moment to talk about that other than to let people know that these upright, outstanding institutes of education and business are as corrupt as anything else on the planet.
Yeah,
and are used as tools to intimidate people,
right?
To break the law, to do all these things that they say that they're going to put a stop to. They're the terrorists. Okay,
mm-hmm.
This is internet terrorism at its finest.
Mm-hmm.
And someone issued those orders. And I would suggest that before we're done, we're going to find out who it is. Going to find out who asked MIT to send you that photo.
Okay.
And who got Adobe to participate in it too. Somebody got a lot of money to do that too. And this is something that can be done to anyone. That's the nature of how this looks, how this information looks.
Mm-hmm.
Is that this can be done, really to anyone. And it's being done in the banking industry, and it's being done with these scams, these letters from Nigeria that are really coming from China, or the letters from Poland that are really coming from Nigeria. You know, you are my very, very relative. I want to give you my money.
Yes.
I will send the money. You go to the bank. You deposit. Don't touch. I'll tell you when to get it. You know, these crazy emails that somebody in the internet business is making a fortune on, because they're finding a sucker every minute and they're getting people to put this money into their bank account. They tell the people, now don't withdraw it until we tell you to. So they go in and they withdraw some money. By the time the bank finds out that it's a bogus check, the owner of the account is down a few thousand dollars or so.
Yeah, it used to be, in earlier times, you know, like in the 20s or 30s, it used to be a street flimflam. Well, I'm not even, I can remember even when I was a kid, I read about it in the paper, so but it used to be a street operation in which there would be a street, it's often a team, it's rarely one person, it's usually a team of two or three. And they'll case a bank, and they'll pick some likely person that they think will have some money, or they saw them in the bank making a deposit or withdrawal, whatever. Because usually the flimflam takes place usually in front of the bank. That's where it most often is staged. And very often well, there's different ways to do it. Sometimes the person comes across an envelope more often. Someone ranges sort of to bump into them, and the envelope is there, and so that the target or the mark, I guess, is present at the time that supposedly the envelope is filed, and naturally it's stuffed with cash, you know, 1,000 or 2,000 or 5,000 or something. And some story is given about, well, what should we do with this? Should we, maybe probably somebody lost their deposit or dropped out of their pocket, they're going to the bank. So they would present something that sounded honest and somehow arrange it with the mark. Or maybe after a while they eventually convince themselves that, well, we can't really find out who it is, so maybe we should, you know, divide it or something. There's many variations on the scam. So what they'll do is they'll convince the party to go into the bank to withdraw $1,000 or $2,000 or something, and in turn they would be led to believe they would get much more. But of course the original envelope that supposedly all this money was in didn't truly have that quantity of money. They were able to make it appear like there was much more money in there because they have ways to use phony bills, to use bent bills, folded. I mean, I'm not in the business, but it was that type of deal. There'd be some sort of routine. If you saw the movie The Sting 30 or so years ago with Paul Newman, you can recall it. It's that type of operation. And now apparently the pretext is pretty similar to what you're reading on the internet in these emails. It's instead of meeting you in person, they want you to, you know, do it electronically. I guess that's how they're getting money out of people. It's pretty inventive, some of the stories. I mean, I usually delete them immediately, but it is amusing. So, I mean, the stories are definitely getting more creative and they're no longer the grandson of some Swahili chieftain who died with $25 million and wants to, you know, give you 20% of this for helping them out and whatever. You know, the variety is enormous. I mean, you know, just the creativity of some of the variations it maybe would be worth just posting that just for the sake of the, you know, the creativity of the spiel.
Yeah, I get those. We all get those.
I believe everyone gets them. Yeah, yeah. I don't think anyone.
I think it would be interesting to write a book and post your answers to these and just get creative.
Yeah. What I did on a couple occasions is just to have a little bit of fun is that I think there was one occasion. It was around Christmas time, and I was getting a lot of it, and I answered one or two. Normally, I don't want to answer because, you know, that in itself it gives them an opening, but I just was telling that I'm just getting so much money from so many other people. I don't have time to accept your money. I just can't arrange it. I'm just loaded with all these other offers. I just got $25 million this morning and $75 million yesterday. I'm sorry, but I just can't use the money. I'm just, you know. So try to have a little laugh here and there about it.
Yeah, I once got an offer from this Japanese car lot. It's the craziest thing. They had used cars on this lot. And they sent a link to this website, and they wanted you to go there and see which cars you would help them bring to Canada. They wanted to bring them to Canada. Now, why would you send an email to somebody in the United States? Wouldn't somebody in Canada maybe be more a likely candidate to import cars to Canada? But I just got such a kick. I had to go look at this website just to see what the cars look like.
Yeah.
And they were beat up bad. And the lot of the place was potholed and everything, you know.
Yeah.
It was pretty nasty.
Yeah, it can be fun. Often the English is fractured, and sometimes they use a phrase or an expression that's totally, you know, upside down, but they don't realize it. But you
wonder if you know, if you're being scammed or this is really legitimate, you know, something like that. But there's a difference between being scammed and actually receiving a threat.
Oh yeah, in this case, this photo was sent certainly as a visual threat, of course. But I'm not overly concerned in so much because there's not enough reason to launch a threat. One could imagine, certainly Ted Gunderson, for instance, had endured many attempts on his life. I think the count's up to 8. It might be 9 over a period of, I don't know, perhaps 20 years or so. But he's had a number of genuine attempts to kill him. His car has been sabotaged, so the wheel came off while, you know, going down the highway at 80 miles an hour. His last attempt was in L.A. was about a year and a half ago. They shot right through the window of his daughter's apartment. He was standing in the window, and so he's had some close calls. But in my case, I just don't. Like you said, this to me seems to me more like a geek, you know, deal. You know, some low level geek. Just because I'm reposting James Caswell's material, they obviously don't want this out, and so we'll see whether it continues or not. I really don't expect a great deal to come of it. We'll find out, but I do want people to read James Caswell's material. They could go to his website.
Let's take a quick break here first.
Okay.
And then when we come back, we'll talk about that, all right?
Okay.
All right. You're listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com, and our special guest, Ken Adachi, and I will be back in a couple of minutes, so don't go away.
Of the 3 million plus edible food plants that grow on Earth, no other single plant can compare with the nutritional value of the powder, seeds, and oil of the hemp plant. At hempusa.org, we ship worldwide these nutritional products with free shipping to the U.S. and Canada. At hempusa.org, we want to educate our listeners that edible hemp is not marijuana and is certified THC-free. Our powder is 50% protein and does not contain gluten. Gluten impairs the cells from absorbing nutrients. This nutrient-dense food can be stored up to 5 years when vacuum-packed and is priced affordably to be used as a storable food. HempUSA.org is a bulk shipper starting with 5 pounds and up. To allow this food to work for you, call 908-691-2608 or go to HempUSA.org and order today. The body will react and heal itself given the proper nutrition. This superfood will be your greatest asset. So try it today, store it today, and change your life. Call 908-691-2608 or order from hempusa.org.
The Idaho Observer, a monthly 24-page newspaper in its ninth year of addressing issues that affect all freedom-loving Americans, is one of the few remaining newspapers courageous enough to print the truth. Concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you? Subscribe today. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues. The Idaho Observer prints what you need to know to be a fully informed American. Go to idaho-observer.com or call 208-255-2307.
Well, partner, we got our pork and beans, we got our coffee, and we got this real nice campfire. Now all we need is the radio. Go get that radio so we can listen to BBS.
Yes, Dad, boy. Got this here radio, but we ain't got no battery.
Well, I told you to buy some batteries yesterday, but you forgot to buy them today.
A man can only do so many things in one day. Go to town and get some for the both of us.
Go to him. Make my day.
Dadgummit, you and your BBS radio.
Second segment tonight of Evident Footprints with our special guest, Mr. Ken Adachi. Okay, Ken, you had mentioned before we went into our break there that you have been posting a few chapters. I think you've got like six chapters of James Casbolt's book in the works, I guess. As he's writing it, you're posting it up on your website.
Yes,
and James has been a sort of a MI6 participant in mind control, and his family goes back. His father, especially, has a history with MI6 as well.
Yeah.
And so he's exposing quite a bit of stuff that's he's recalling right now. And I know that when he first came out a couple of years ago, it was sort of run-of-the-mill stuff. The old stuff from 20, 30 years ago was what he was talking about, with mention of Phil Schneider and some of the underground bases and that. So none of it was really new. But I noticed in this book he's writing, this is like cutting-edge stuff. So,
yes, it is.
Do you want to talk about that, how you came about to receive these from him? And
yes, I will. I recall approximately a year and a half ago, maybe more like a year and a half ago, I started to get emails from people that were telling me about James Casbolt, and that he was apparently a new, let's call him a whistleblower. It's not quite the right word, but for now we'll just call him a whistleblower. who was exposing very dark operations that had to do with underground bases in England, in the UK. Now, prior, I never heard of his name before, but the fact that he does come from the UK and his experiences were mainly there. This is new information. Up to now, we haven't had a high level, if you will, insider blowing the whistle on underground military base, goings on in England. Yes, here in the United States, we learned a great deal from Phil Snyder, of course, Al Bielek, a man who came out with a lot of valuable information in the mid-90s. We used the name of Branton. And there's been others. I can't think of all the names right now, but I was even contacted by a fellow who maybe 2 years ago worked at an underground base, and we talked one Sunday afternoon on the phone for 3 or 4 hours, and wow, I was just tickled pink that he was willing to tell me as much as he did. He had worked under a number of them. Dulce is the one in New Mexico, is the one they most, but he mentioned others. So there certainly have been people in working as an ally to James Caswell. There's another man in the UK named Barry King, who came out with information apparently in the early 90s or maybe mid-90s about these underground bases in the UK. And one location is in a place called Peasmore. And he was essentially trying to help get the word out, tell the public this is dangerous stuff to do when you're in this, when you've already signed contracts never to reveal this stuff, and you got all kinds of heavy-duty, high-level clearances to blow the whistle on this stuff. And that takes a lot of guts, so I take my hat off to these guys. And apparently James was under mind, was victimized by mind control from, early childhood on. He follows the typical pattern of the offspring of a family, a man who had already been in the employ and was used also in a mind control victim by MI6. So this is typical of CIA families, I suppose now more and more even FBI families, military intelligence families, the special forces, the Navy SEALs, those types of groups, they involve the family. It's not just the person, the man usually, who's in the military. The family are also victimized. They're typically chipped and mind controlled. That's the most common deal. So he came from a family, a long family line of who was in service to, to the military, to the British military, and to the intelligence services. So he's been groomed for this job from an early age, and they traumatize them. They use electronic means to fracture their psyche into various alter personalities, which are then individually programmed to do different tasks. One personality might be an assassin, another personality might be a spy, another personality might be a super powerful person. There's almost no limit to the number of personalities that could be created. And this is what happened to James, and he's aware of that. And apparently, though, what many older victims of mind control, I should say, do report is that usually this programming began at an earliest childhood, often from babyhood or from the toddler years forward, 2, 3, 4, 5. They really start to get intensive with the training from that point, and then it continues right into their teens. And what happens is, though, is very often by time a mind control victim hits 30, the amnesia walls begin to disintegrate somewhat, and the individual starts getting flashes of memories of this programming activity or perhaps some dark deed he might have been involved with. Say he assassinated people. Maybe he'll get a flashback of that. And if they get a spiral bound notebook and start taking notes and just write down everything that pops into their head in these flashes, very often they can draw the information out. It takes a long time. It takes years. But they call this journaling, and it's a way to elicit these memories, which have been suppressed or are hidden in the subconscious mind, to bring it forward to the conscious mind. Now, the people who have a program, the mind control victim, naturally don't want this to happen. So what they usually do is they often become immediately aware that the victim is starting to recall things. They will pick him up. They will abduct him, whatever. And they'll subject him to reprogramming. The idea is to bury the memories deeper in the subconscious and then to create a cover screen memory to replace the one that, you know, really occurred. So victims go through this a lot. So they start to remember, they're abducted, the programming is firmed up, as they say, and then they let him go again, and the person thinks he's running his ordinary life and is not aware of the mind control stuff until another flashback comes. So this breakdown seems to begin from the age 30 forward. And James Caswell mentions in one of his tapes something that Kathy O'Brien mentions in her book, which was called Transformation of America, Transformation in America, which was co-authored with Mark Phillips. They printed the book around 95, I believe. 95, 96. And she says that the expression that these programmers and handlers use is that when a mind control slave gets to the age of 30, they're usually killed because they don't want them recalling and they have an endless supply of new younger people coming up that they would use. So in the case of the sex slave also, just because she's hit 30, you know, their beauty is not the same as, let's say, it might have been at 20 or 18 or 15. So the expression they use to the slave is it's called being thrown from the freedom train. And that's the exact same expression that James Caswell used in one of his video interviews. I've reproduced the audio from that interview on my James Caswell page. So there's this problem. Once the victim arrives at the age of 30 and 40, they start, not all, but some, start recalling fragments of memories. And in his case, what he did is that as he started to recall, he sought out a professional deep programmer in which you can go for sessions in which there aren't many people who can do this, except often the people who are the best at it are the people who originally were programmers. A mm-hmm. mind control programmer is typically under mind control themselves, and they don't even know they're a programmer. And one such person is Cisco Wheeler. She's the lady who co-authored those fabulous books with Fritz Springmeier.
Fritz Springmeier, yeah.
Right, called the Illuminati Formula for a Total Mind Control Slave. And then there was a second book, The Further Insights into the First Book. Fabulous information. Well, anyway, Cisco has done conferences, but I've talked to her on the phone a number of occasions. And she has very good information about this because she was a programmer. So she is skilled in deprogramming a person who was programmed with those types of programs that she was accustomed to. Her deal was MKUltra and Monarch, which was the earlier trauma-based programming techniques that grew out of World War II. But approximately from the mid to late 70s forward, and certainly by 82, 83, The people working on mind control techniques in Montauk, Long Island, there's an underground base there. It was called the Montauk Project. They had perfected an electronic method of programming a mind control victim without subjecting them to this years of the trauma based method, which is, you know, really brutal on the victim because they have to endure a great deal of horror and pain, like you can't believe, in many near-death experiences in order to fracture their psyche. What they did with MK Ultra victims like Bryce Taylor is that, and this has happened to, you know, thousands of people, not just her, but they would bring them to almost to the point of death. So, for instance, as a child, she had multiple, you know, times in which the programmer had her in a pool and was drowning her and just got her to the point and just rescue her before she expired. In other cases, I remember she explained in her book that she was abused by Frank Sinatra. He, of course, was an insider with the Illuminati, and he used and abused mind control slaves. Well, his deal was is that as he was, you know, Bryce was a sex slave most of the time. He was having sex with her, and he was choking her. And she almost died. And that's another technique they use to bring the victim almost to the point of death. And she's going through more than one, you know, choking with her. I mean, just try to imagine how you would feel if that was happening to you, to just bring you to the brink of death. But these people are skilled, the handlers and programmers. I don't know if Frank Sinatra was a programmer, but he was certainly a handler. They're taught the techniques, you know, how to bring the person just shy of the point of death. So James Casbolt, because of his age, I don't know if he went through trauma. I presume he did as a younger child, because he describes some of the things he experienced from 5 years old. And he, as most children in the circumstances, he witnessed other children in his group being murdered right before his eyes. That's part of the, quote, training. We can thank Joseph Mengele for that bit of technique. So he witnessed many horrific things from a very early and tender age. I mean, I would, as an adult, I think it would, you know, have severe psychological thing to handle, difficult thing to handle, witnessing as an adult. But if you're a five-year-old child, I mean, this is the evil of this of these operations is just beyond anything that, you know, a normal person could say. This is beyond the pale. So he's had many. James Casbolt has endured a lot, as any victim of mind control, particularly at his level, because of the type of job he did. They wanted him to do, and he did do all sorts of jobs like assassinations and so forth. So he started to get his memories back in earnest, I think, around 2006. And once that happened, I guess he wanted to tell somebody. So he probably contacted radio stations or people who might write up. Man, I'm sure he wrote a lot of material himself. So he just sort of tried to get out there, as it were, into the internet. And he did radio interviews with internet radio hosts, as well as George Norrie. I think he did a show with George Norrie in 2007, I believe. He did one show with him. And he started to go to these UFO conferences, et cetera, where this sort of topic is discussed. And he was interviewed at one in England last year, October 2007, in Cornwall. And he makes these interviews available on his website. What I did is I recorded that interview, and I converted it over to an audio file. So if people want to hear the audio, that, you know, because it doesn't take up nearly as much file space as a video, and of course, he's just talking, so he's not even showing things on a blackboard. So I converted it to an audio file, and people can go to my James Caswell page and access it there. Now, the book, I had someone a gal who was the person who started to help him put up a website, I'm guessing about a year and a half ago, something like that. And she had told me, you know, that he's got this book and would I be interested in reading it and perhaps, you know, putting it on my site. And I said, sure. I says, I don't know too much. I just heard a little bit, saw a little bit, but I really didn't look into his information deeply. So when she told me that he was putting up one chapter at a time and then he would put up another chapter a week or 2 weeks later, something like that, I told this gal, I says, you know, I think they're going to probably sabotage the site if he does it that way, because if it's as revealing as you're indicating to me, that they're probably going to make it very difficult for anyone to get to that site. So I thought it'd be wiser for her to get a copy of the book. I said, you know, you should send me a copy and perhaps 20 or 30 or 40 other people, just in case they do wipe out the website, maybe James will disappear and we'll lose the information. It's better to get the whole book and post it all at once. He wanted to do it free. He didn't want to try to sell it, much to his credit, because he wants to get the information out because the time is short. What he's talking about, there's a very small time window. So she agreed with me. So a few months went by. In the interim, James was both going to America and Scotland, different places, to have deprogramming sessions. So James continues to have deprogramming therapies. He's hardly free of programming. He's being deprogrammed, but these are the most sophisticated mind control programs developed by man, the sort that he's been bound with. And they have all kinds of there are programming layered within the programming, so that if a psychiatrist or a deprogrammer attempts to uncover these layers of programming, that in itself will cause the party to, in some cases, attempt to commit suicide, in other cases, attempt to kill the deprogrammer. They're layered in with these booby traps programming in order to prevent anyone trying to deprogram her. So this is a very, very tricky business, and you have to know what you're doing. And there's very few people who have the skill, knowledge, and expertise to do this competently. And I haven't asked James who, you know, it's very likely he doesn't want to reveal that information, because I do know it's hard to find a competent deprogrammer. Mm-hmm. So he's still going through deprogramming, and who's to say how long this will go on? And what's happening is that he can be abducted without his knowledge. They have all kinds of ways to do it. They could call him up on the phone. He could hear a particular tone. It'll go into a trance. They could send a team in there. They could pick him up. They could take him to a lab somewhere. They can hook all kinds of electronic stuff into him and reprogram him. Whatever he's trying to unprogram with the deprogrammer, they can go right back in and reinstall that. Now, that has happened to dozens of people that I've had firsthand conversations with. I talked to Bryce Taylor on many occasions, because she has been working with a deprogrammer named Steve Ogilvie. And this is, and Stephanie Ralph, her and Michael Ralph have done some work in this area. And the most common deal was Stephanie Ralph, for instance, she'd be working on deprogramming somebody all weekend long. And the very day they left, the Ralph's place, the military would pick up this party and reprogram, just reinstall everything that they just... So it's an ongoing fight. It's not like they forget about you or let you go. So the handlers and the programmers of James Caswell very much have him in their control, and he and they both know it. And James will say that up front. He can be triggered to kill somebody or do whatever they want him to do, and he will have no conscious knowledge of it at all. So it's, but what I admire about the guy is the fact that he's one of very few who have his level of information that's willing to just go public. He, of course, he's been warned that he's going to be killed if he continues to do this, and the more, let's say, the juicier the material is, they ramp up the threats. If I just put Chapter 6 up on October 3, I believe, and in that chapter he mentions that he was just recently warned within a couple weeks of having posted that chapter, sometime in perhaps September or late August, he was warned if he continues to talk about this particular area, he will definitely be killed. And he does talk about that area. The guy's
whatever
very...
happened? I was going to ask, whatever happened to the days when people were encouraged to write books? They got advances, you know.
Yeah. I mean,
nice letter, or maybe a phone call, lunch, dinner,
yeah.
Something like that, you know. How are you coming along with the book? Well,
yeah, right. I mean, you used to offer an advance. I mean, there's all kinds of incentives to write. So yeah, I'm impressed by what I read from him and his video interviews and his audio tapes. He seems to corroborate the information that I've gleaned over the years from other sources.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to, and but more importantly, he's adding new information. The situation in terms of a timetable is getting dicey now.
Mm-hmm.
According to James, 2012 is their target date of installing the New World Order around the whole world. And I mean, it's the end of 2008. So we're only talking three years and a month here. So, naturally, therefore, if they're going to, you know, have their whole nine yards in place by 2012, a lot of dramatic, incredibly difficult things are going to occur between now and then. So I think we can look forward to events occurring, particularly here in the United States. I think they will probably try major earth changes, since they have the technology to create earthquakes, tornadoes, hurricanes. We've talked about this before. I found out a new technology from James's book that I had not known about, something our government, you know, and the other governments working in codes with the Illuminati.
Let me guess, it's called telling the truth.
Well, this system is referred to as the Tablets of Destiny, and apparently it's some sort of crystal-based technology, and these devices are located at strategic grid points on the Earth, and because of their location and because of the technology, our friends our illuminated friends apparently can trigger very massive earthquakes, tornadoes, and hurricanes of a biblical proportion. So I've been expecting the Illuminati to cause an earthquake along California, for one. I think that's a sure thing. And I think there'll be another very major earthquake along the New Madrid Fault in the Midwest. So I expect that to happen, and I wish it would happen 20 years from now, but I expect it to happen within a year or two or three. So they will use that probably as one of their major pretexts as an excuse for martial law. And once they go to martial law, then things are going to move very, very fast. They'll, you know, most people who listen to these type of radio shows are aware of the concentration camps that are scattered all over North America, both above ground and below ground. And there's at least 133 of them. And some of these facilities can hold very large numbers of people. There's at least five that I know of, because Stuart Swerdlow said so around the year 2000. At least five of them can hold over a million people, and there's one that can hold 5 million, and there's another, I think it's an island off Alaska, that can hold 3 million. Now, they have three lists. It's called the red list, the blue list, and the yellow list. And when they declare martial law, they'll probably round up people on the red list at first. They'll do it at night. They'll do it during the middle of the night. You know, they'll come into your house at four in the morning. They'll probably do it under the cover of darkness, which means that they'll arrange for the electricity to go out in your neighborhood. And they'll come in like a SWAT team. They'll just send who knows how many, 40 or 50 people perhaps. And they'll just move into your house with concussion grenades and their typical assault routines and take you out and put you in a van and take you to some place where a helicopter would be waiting you to be taken to some location where you and other people are on the red list will probably be eliminated right away. I don't think there's any thought of talking to you about it. I think they're just going to just start executing those folks. Now, the people on the blue list will eventually be gathered up and sent to these concentration camps, not necessarily for extermination, but for analysis and for documentation and to decide what they're going to do with them. Some may be eliminated. Others will be mind control, subjected to mind control, and then released. And then on the yellow list, that's more of the kind of the catch-all, the least threatening to the New World Order, the least aware. Those people will probably be given microchips, vaccinations, and so forth, but they'll probably be allowed to continue to, you know, live in their homes. But it's going to get dicey once they kick in the martial law. Now, they'll use a pretext of if they can pull off another terrorist attack, they could do that. But I think, I have the feeling that the earth changes is the more likely thing that will be a better cover story, because more and more people now are catching on that the false flag, and so they're weary of that now. So I have the feeling the earth changes are probably on the agenda, and then they could accomplish the same thing that they might if they, let's say, popped off a nuclear bomb in a city, which I think I mentioned to you when we talked prior. I feel, it's just my guess, and I have nothing else to go on other than it's a guess, it's an intuitive feeling, but I don't believe friendly aliens will permit large nuclear bombs to detonate in American or cities, or cities anywhere for that matter. I don't think they want the nuclear winter scenario to poison the planet. And there are a bunch of friendly aliens here in addition to the not-so-friendly ones. So they have the technology to prevent these nukes from detonating. So I just don't have a great deal of fear of a nuke attack in our cities, or a false flag nuke attack. I think they will not interfere with small, what they call tactical nuclear devices, which, you know, might take out a building, like a large, secure Marriott building in Pakistan, for instance. But for a large nuclear bomb, my feeling is no. Friendly aliens aren't going to prevent that from happening. Now, I also feel that it's more than possible that even the earthquake stuff can be mitigated and perhaps reduced to, let's say, a much smaller event than what was originally planned, because we've seen it's possible to slow down and to deactivate hurricanes.
Well, you know, this whole thing doesn't even have to happen.
Well, yeah, that's where I'm kind of going. So if you want to,
you know, I mean,
if you want to pipe in here, you can go ahead and
hearing, you know, you hear this on, and I'm not criticizing you. I'm just pointing out that you hear this on the Patriot networks every day of the week. They're talking about this. This is what they're planning on doing. Red list.
I want to review that because
consider them on the red list.
Yeah, but
okay.
That's where I'm heading on this conversation. I want to review the facts of what is in place, now I want to, you know, kind of talk about the idea that there's a principle at work. I mention it once in a while in my writing, but I'll just reiterate it here. These people who are behind the New World Order, sort of people that James Casbolt describes in these underground bases in the UK and America and Australia, doing these horrific, terrible mutilations and murders of children and women, etc. They're doing horrific things. Every action brings an opposite and equal reaction. Just like Newton said, when it comes to a propulsive force, right? That principle is a universal law that permeates the entire universe. For every action, for every thought, for every deed, for every word, there is an equal and opposite reaction, deed, word, thought created at the same moment the original deed or thought was created. It's, if you read the books of the very fascinating, interesting books of mystic Walter Russell, he talks about this very phenomena. Two things are created at the same moment in time, the positive side of the waveform and the negative side of the waveform.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing is saying for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. Now, every negative deed performed by the dark side at the same moment creates a positive action on the light side. The reason the Illuminati's plans keep on blowing up in their face, as it were, let's go back to the story of, you know, Weishaupt and 1776, Bavarian Illuminati, we're going to plan to have this take over the world, it's going to be a one-world satanic deal, we're going to use the Masons, we're going to use the churches, we're going to use education to bring all this about, but when all said and done, we're going to have this one-world satanic deal here. And what happens even when they're in the planning stages of it, we both know that the French Revolution, 1788 approximately, was a bloodfest and a half. That's the ideal. It was fomented and brought into existence by the Illuminati. And they would have followed that same plan in America. Mind you, America declared its independence in 1776, but we had to fight the Revolutionary War, and then we had to, you know, create our own constitution, 1887, I can't remember,
1787, yeah.
Okay. So the point is, the 1776 was the May 1 was the date Adam Weishaupt, you know, set up this deal that they're going to take over this country and the world. And no more than the French Revolution had, you know, gone through its bloodbath, that there is a writer riding through France at night, I guess, who was a courier for the Illuminati, struck down by a bolt of lightning. The police find a dispatch in which they're talking about essentially repeating the French Revolution in Bavaria and other parts around Europe. So they exposed the Illuminati. That set the Illuminati way back. They were thinking they were going to do this, you know, in the late 1700s. I mean, that totally. So it's this phenomena at work. For every evil deed, there's a positive deed that is a recoil, if you will. So for this massive amount of murder, pain, horror that they've inflicted on hundreds of thousands, millions of people since they started this mind control nightmare following World War II, millions of people have been subjected to this and killed. That creates a positive blowback, if you will. And they're getting very antsy now. They need to ramp the action up to get this deal in place by 2012. Well, I think every time that they try something that's dramatic, involves a lot of deaths, a lot of pain and misery, I think you're going to get a blowback effect. You're going to get a recoil effect. We saw it happen with Katrina. They jacked up that hurricane. They steered it straight into New Orleans. I mean, you know, hurricanes don't take a 90-degree right turn. They just don't do that. But that one did, and it was amazing following the course of that hurricane when they were.
And the footprint was on the web a month earlier, too.
I know.
It was on the NOAA website.
Yeah. I mean, it's so many. Okay. So, then, because of that, though, and I'm not taking credit here, but I got involved in at least I did my little effort to my website. Talk about people using focus. We have some toys here, some Orgone toys that seem to help amplify. But a lot of people, I believe, around the world, I know Don Cross Group, I know Lily Oshesko, people who refer to themselves as etheric warriors, and I'm sure there was meditators, there was probably Tibetan monks. A lot of people silently were mentally focused on reducing the hurricanes that followed in the wake of Katrina. That's why those other hurricanes, which were supposed to roar through Rita, Wilma, I can't remember all the names, but except for Rita, except for Katrina, all those, how many were there? Six, seven, eight? I can't remember.
Yeah,
all those,
a bunch of them, yeah.
Subsequent, each one of them petered out because people were putting focused intent on it and they were taking the charge out of those storms. And I think, at least according to my good friend Zias Livingstone up in Canada, they couldn't even produce a hurricane for the next couple of years because they, meaning the manipulators, had depleted something that Zias Livingstone calls etheric ice from the ether over the Atlantic Ocean. Having depleted it, they apparently need that for their in order to create and jack up a hurricane. So let's see, Katrina was in 2005. I remember on the news here in Southern California, in February and March, the news, all the news channels, particularly NBC, were predicting that there was going to be a minimum of 11 major hurricanes in the summer of 2006. I mean, they actually had the audacity to predict the number. Now, I know a little something about weather and the official science of weather. No one in their right mind can predict a hurricane, not one made by nature. But if you have one being jacked up by HAARP, and then you can get a memo from the Pentagon, so the reporter can predict 11 hurricanes. There's no such thing as predicting a hurricane. Completely impossible. But they said we're going to have 11, and it's the typical scare, and oh, God, it's going to be bad this year, oh, God. We didn't
last
have
year, they
hurricane.
Were predicting 18 of them. I don't remember how many hit, but they were predicting 18.
There were zero in 2006. There wasn't a hurricane.
Yeah.
I mean, it fizzled. So, and of course, I didn't hear one person on TV say, "Hey, what happened to all the hurricanes?" Not a word was spoken. Okay, so anyway, that what I'm illustrating here, what I'm talking about, and for anyone listening to this recording, is that people can apply their consciousness and their focus intent to reverse whatever they try to throw at us. Not only reverse, we can prevent by holding a focused thought that this earthquake in California, for instance, is not going down. The New Madrid quake is not going to happen. I'm going to see to it. I and the tens of thousands of other of consciousness elevated individuals are also going to be holding this thought, and we're going to create enough of a collective thought form that no matter how high-tech their stuff is, it's not going to overcome the power of a collective thought form. And
why don't we do this, Ken? Why don't we also hold our intent and our vision on Bernanke and Paulson and Goldman Sachs and Citibank putting back the $14 trillion they're holding in Citibank? Have them have a loss of time, missing time, and have them put that money back in the Treasury. Get rid of the Federal Reserve and go back to a gold standard.
Yes, in fact, I have a couple emails from a fellow who sent me ideas about getting rid of the Federal Reserve. I haven't put them up yet, but...
I mean, let's just do it like that.
But there is no limit. You know, one thing you learn in, you know, I learned the Dow's in the early 90s after first, when I first came here to California, I started to go to the Dow's Society, and I really like those people because they're just ordinary folks, but they do extraordinary things and they talk about extraordinary things. Well, you douse for a while and you study books on dowsing, you hear a bunch of lectures, you realize there is no limit to what can be accomplished with dowsing. I originally thought that dowsing is just for the purpose of finding water or sometimes minerals or gold or oil. But you can find anything with dowsing, but even more important, you can discover any information you want through dowsing. So once you realize that, you start saying, hey, well, why should I limit myself to this area or that area? Maybe I can douse. And so what we do in dowsing, we sort of ask the pendulum for permission to douse, and then you ask them, can I do this or affect that? And if the pendulum says yes, then you go through a bunch of questions or answers, or you give it commands, and it's quite amazing. I don't consider myself necessarily a good dowser. I do it and I enjoy it, but I've been blown away by the results that I've seen by people who are master dowsers, like Walt Woods, for instance, is quite an extraordinary guy. I've gone to maybe 12 workshops of his. He has 3-day workshops, which he offers once a year. And Mamma Mia, I've learned so many wonderful, just unbelievable, extraordinary things from his lectures.
Well, I found the information on that threat photo you received via dowsing, first of all.
Yes.
But then I used my intuition on the photograph itself.
Yes.
And the two factors seem to match up.
Yeah. So, yeah. No. Well, just to take a second I just want to mention that how impressed I am by your ability, because you demonstrated that to me 6 or 7 or 8 months ago. I had a friend who I wanted to know more about his family and his background to try to figure out why he was experiencing the difficulties in his life that he's having. So I asked you to do a reading, and I told you nothing about this individual or his family. I revealed nothing. So I wanted to see if you can figure out who his mother and father were, and did he have any brothers and sisters, and where did they live, and what were their names. And we were on the phone about 45 or 50 minutes, and I was just dumbstruck here as you were getting an impression, and then you would tell me, well, they live here. And I've, of course, I'm not saying yes or no, but I'm making notes. And as you were going down the list of where they lived and who they were and how many brothers, how many sisters, and then the part that floored me is that you were able to come up with the names of these individuals. You didn't know any of this. And I'm listening to this, and I'm saying, oh, my God. So I pay attention. When you get a psychic impression, you know, you've proven to me just how highly accurate you are. So I wish I could achieve what you can do. You're very gifted in this area, Don. And I think as time goes by, your radio show and your writings become more popular. This aspect of your talent is going to become more known, and I think you're going to, you know, have a much larger following in the years to come, because you are quite a sleuth. You can, because of your dowsing ability, because of your intellectual ability, and your psychic ability, plus some other things we won't mention, but you have a lot of resources available to you, so you can dig out information. That's how you're able to, you know, zero in on that picture so quickly for me. And I was very grateful that you could do that. So when it comes to your articles and so forth, people should know that there's a combination of research resources that are going into your conclusions and findings, and it's not just guesswork off the top of your head.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it usually starts with the impression, and then all the research is done basically for everybody else.
Yeah, you know? That's right. So you sort of get a psychic insight to the meat of the matter, and then you get the research to satisfy the average person who needs mm-hmm. the hard data.
Yeah, you know, there are questions that people have still. I mean, they're reading a research piece, and then they're asking for proof. My God, yeah. read the article. You know,
that's right.
There's a system going on there. There's an analysis. There's some logic going on
yes.
there, too. And it's comparing the facts and that or the so-called facts that don't stand up the first time you go out and look at something. And,
yes.
and, you know, there is so much mind control that people keep reverting back to, yeah, but they said this, and this is, everybody knows this. Well,
right.
Because it's been on the mainstream media.
Yeah, I refer to that as conditioning to distinguish it, you know, from programmed mind control.
Yeah.
So that when people are being influenced by the media, so I refer to that as conditioning, so that they too realize that because of repetition of lies and distortions and non-truths in the media, mainstream, that they subliminally or subconsciously absorbed a belief about a person, an event, because they've heard it repeated so often. And of course, mm-hmm. that's the reason they repeat it, is so you would embed it into your subconscious as quote, your opinion.
Yeah, you know, there's an interesting thing too, is that we hear these facts, like we're given a birth date, and we try to figure everything out around that birth date without ever considering that the birth date itself can be disinformation.
Can be, yes,
now,
right.
Now let me give you, this is a crazy analogy, but this makes as much sense. In fact, the argument, and I'll go to McCain's grandfather. His grandfather was presented to us in picture form days before his death in 1945 as a 60-year-old man.
Yep.
Okay?
Yeah.
And you're looking at a 60-year-old man, and he looks 80. That's equivalent to a newborn baby looking like he's 20.
Mm.
I mean, let's talk about the difference of 20 years old. Now, somebody listening is going to say, oh, how can you say a 20-year-old man looks like a newborn baby? That's the point I'm making, is a 60-year-old man does not look like an 80-year-old man. And so the birth date was a lie to begin with, you see? And the impression that I got, and this is valuable to anybody that wants to respond to their own intuition or develop their own intuition, because it's there. It's just dormant. And that's that you trust that feeling inside, and you don't trust it with things that are going to put you in jeopardy, but you give yourself little tests over time.
Yeah.
You know, you can guess birth dates, you can play around with cards, and this isn't any dark science or anything like that. You have those gifts are God-given gifts.
Yes.
To know things beyond what you're told. In fact, when you're lied to, it's to your advantage to know those things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if they're not real, then nothing you're being told and nothing you're learning is real, because we're certainly being lied to about history. We're being lied to in the educational process about the truth about the laws of physics and mathematics and language, the meaning of words, and all the different other types of science and history. Above and beyond everything, and history affects every day of our lives. The lies that we've been told about it as much as the truths. So, you know, if there ever are any truths. So, I just put this out there that people would use their own discernment. They can test it, and they may find that they are more sensitive and more accurate than me or anyone else considered to be accurate in that area.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, this is the time in our history which people should try to embrace increasing their psychic sensitivity, because, as you said, by virtue of being born a human being with a soul, you came prepackaged with psychic
faculties,
capabilities. Right. Now, if you don't practice, if you never tried to practice riding a bike, you're not going to be able to ride a bike successfully. So you'll say, I can't ride a bike. No, it's not that. You haven't tried to learn to ride a bike, because once you begin to acquire a skill, you hone it, it becomes sharper, it develops an ability. If you never attempt to play a guitar or a violin, well, you'll say, I can't play. Well, no, you haven't tried to play, you haven't tried to practice, but you certainly have the capability. And we need to be reminded of that. And anyone can do this silently on their own. You can just try to do it in simple little ways. When the phone rings, just ask yourself, who is that? The psychic information flows when you are most relaxed, when you are making an effort. Psychic material information will not flow. Being relaxed and not concerned about the answer or the outcome is one of the rules of dowsing, for instance. If you try to will the answer in dowsing, in other words, you want it to say yes, well, it will say yes, but it's not an accurate. So you can't allow yourself to become emotionally involved, as it were, and you have to be completely carefree and just open to, like a child might be, open to whatever comes, or whatever you get. And there are many books on developing psychic ability, but because movement of our solar system around the galaxy, apparently we're going through a part of the cycle. The ancient Hindus and others talk about a 26,000 year cycle around the center of the universe, and we sometime our universe seems to get us closer to what is called the God Center, in which apparently the energy of enlightenment is stronger. And then on another part of the second half of the cycle, of that 26,000-year cycle, the Hindus, by the way, call this the Yuga, Y-U-G-A, cycle. And there's a little book by a Indian Swami by the name of Sri Yukteswar, who wrote a little book, and I think it was 1898, and it's called The Science, I'm trying to remember the title now. I have the book. It's a wonderful little book. It's not very thick. It's maybe only 60 or 70 pages. But it's a wonderful book that explains these very profound secrets of the universe, including this cycle that I'm referring to. So now, we're coming into a portion of the cycle in which we're moving towards greater enlightenment, whereby in, let's say, earlier periods like the Middle Ages, we're in a period of the cycle where we're, you know, closer to the darkening, we're sort of on the tail end of the darkening part of the cycle. But now we're moving into the lighter part. So our consciousness is going up. Apparently, I'm told, I have no way to know this, but I'm told by, you read it in many sites, is that the resonant vibratory frequency of the planet is increasing. And therefore, they say the people on the planet and the animals and everything here is vibration is also increasing. And this is another indication that we're moving towards a higher, faster vibrating density or into a higher dimension.
Mm-hmm. So, that's usually referred to as moving into the photon band or the photon belt, where our sun aligns itself with its twin star, Alcyone. And it's at that during that alignment that energy flows through the whole of our solar system.
Okay, well, I've heard of the photon belt. I've read about it for years, and I don't claim to have, you know, special insights or knowledge about it, but I believe the principle of what's explained, it sounds reasonable to me. Because I've noticed in the last maybe few years,
yes,
unusual physical phenomena, besides the pleasantry of seeing a huge subsiding of chemtrail activity in this area, another pleasant phenomenon I've noticed over the last couple of years is the sun is significantly whiter when it goes down at dusk than it used to be, significantly whiter. And that's telling me something. That's telling me there's more energy coming out of the sun. And that's another indication. Oh, by the way, that point about the sun putting out more heat is part of the, quote, global warming scam, is that all the planets of this solar system are heating up because the sun's heating up. And as a result, you're going to get some polar ice cap melting, of course. And, of course, the Illuminatus, blood drinkers, Mason, Satanists like Al Gore, will tell us it's all because we're having too large a carbon footprint.
I would think Al Gore would imply that too many people were using the internet.
That's a possibility. I mean,
and all the heat, all the friction from the people using the
line.
Yeah,
at one point I think he said he invented it. Well, anyway, Vampire Gore wants to convince the world, or you know, a couple of years ago he began his propaganda campaign that this global warming thing. Well, so I believe the planet probably is going up in frequency, and if we do experience this dimensional shift, some people say the fourth dimension is where we're heading, others tell me the fifth dimension. I hear the fifth more often than the fourth.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have any expertise in this. I'm listening to this, and I'm saying, okay, if it happens, cool, because apparently the Illuminati type, the reptilians, the reptilian pals, and all these minions that work on their behalf who are involved in enslavement, murder, mind control, brutalizing, butchery, these folks, apparently, their frequency will not elevate as a normal human beings will, and they're going to apparently accelerate in aging. And we might move into a planetary system in which these folks are simply are no longer here because they can't survive in this higher dimension reality that they say we're moving towards. Now, again, I don't know if any of this is going to happen. It'd be rather pleasant to experience it because it'd be swell to be rid of these parasites, you know, especially the aliens, which are, you know, the negative aliens, which are the driving force behind the human appearing Illuminati. And it'd be nice if we can just be free of them, and then we could start having, building lives of peace, of fraternity, of a cultural enrichment, and we can go to, we can be finished with wars and lab-created biowarfare weapons. We can be finished with nuclear energy. We can get all the free energy we want from the ether. It could be a wonderful, idyllic planet someday.
And we could be finished with lies, too.
Yeah, I mean, if we move into the higher dimension that they're talking about, they say that we will then be able to communicate with each other telepathically. We'll be able to communicate with animals telepathically. It certainly sounds like it could be a wonderful world to live in. And it's important for us who are in this game, as it were, to bear this in mind, that to capitulate to fear, to anxiety, to a doom and gloom perception of the future helps bring that reality about. And if you do just the opposite, if you need to recognize it. I don't want to put my head in the sand and foolishly say, oh, that train's not coming, I'm going to stand on the track. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that anyone who is familiar with metaphysics knows that thoughts create reality ultimately. And collective thought is a far more powerful changer of reality than an individual thought. Now, of course, it depends who's doing the thinking, but the more of us who hold the notion that the New World Order is not going to succeed, their nuclear weapons are not going to explode, their massive California fall into the Pacific Ocean scenario is not going to happen. If we all hold this, we could well mitigate this planned disaster to a much smaller level. Yeah, we'll have an earthquake in California, but I mean, at least, you know, the coastline might not, you know, go to the Arizona border. And I think the more we think positive about the New World Order is must be running against time. That's why they're trying to accelerate the program. That's why they're saying 2012 is the drop-dead date. I think it's drop-dead because they're going to drop dead.
Mm-hmm.
I think their frequency...
I was going to say, I think it would be extremely productive for us every time they say someone's going to attack Iran or they need more money to prop up the economy. Any of this hogwash that we're hearing, let's just intend for Washington to get an enema, the whole city.
Yeah.
Let's just visualize a big enema.
Yeah, an enema, yeah. Like, you can imagine, like, you can materialize 2 quarts of prune juice in the stomach of all these, you know, manipulators and honchos and, you know, dark dudes who are affecting these brutal acts. And imagine that, you know, that prune juice kind of bubbling away there and just kind of just sliding with a force down into the intestines so that they just can't even make it to the bathroom. And, you know, Don Cross had talked about many of these sort of, let's say, mind pictures in the earlier years of which I was putting up his material, and according to his wife, who's a very good psychic, she can travel in the astral at will, and she can see things. She said in many cases what Don was visualizing actually materialized in 3D reality. And James Caswell reports in Chapter 6 that a major shakeup had occurred in some of the bigger underground bases here in America in the last week of August of this year. I'm just talking about between August 25 and 30 of 2008. Apparently, certain friendly aliens are just fed up with the killing and the brutalization and the abuse of women and children in these underground bases, and they have these, according to James Caswell, they have these sonic weapons which cause no effect or change on the surface, but can penetrate deep into the ground and cause great damage in these bases, which are 2, 4, 5, 7 miles under the surface of the earth. And he said that happened in a number of bases, including Montauk. And I mentioned to you, Montauk is where the electronic form of mind control programming was perfected, and many evil things have occurred and continue to occur under Montauk Island. And apparently they had a flushing, as it were, the sort of enema that you're talking about just a month or so ago, in the last week of August. He also mentioned some other bases. I just can't remember them. So there's a group on my website, a gal by the name of Lily Oshesko, who works with a group of people called the Women Warriors, and they have a get together over the phone and the internet at least once a week and sometimes twice a week, in which they have what they call boosting sessions. And what they do is that collectively, some of them are psychics, others can mobilize energy, let's say. And I've been involved in those sessions on a few occasions. I need to find the time to do it more often. But it's fascinating. The psychics can kind of go around the world and see what the Illuminati's up to and what they're planning and who's doing what. And they can absolutely throw spanner wrenches into their plans on the astral plane, and it's amazing. There's undoubtedly many groups like Lily's. Don Cross group is doing this as well. I'm sure there are monk groups and meditators who we know nothing about who are doing this as well. And the more people hold the thought, just holding the thought that we can change reality by projecting positive outcomes, the sort of things we want to occur. We don't want the New World Order to pull off another false flag operation. So we're going to set that thought in our mind. We're not going to allow them to cause major earthquakes like the Sichuan earthquake that was artificially created in China in May. So we're going to hold these thoughts that these guys are not going to succeed. And I think about it every day. I don't have to repeat it in my mind. I'm just holding like a vigil thought, let's put it that way, that we're going to take apart the New World Order. We're going to dismantle these people, and we're going to do it through our minds. And it's a form of prayer. Prayer is nothing more than setting a petition. You're asking something. You help me in this regard, and you're directing your request to God, to saints, to helpful angels. You can direct it to the personage of your choice, or just as a general request of God.
Not to Barney Frank, you're saying.
Not to Barney Frank, and not to Barney Frank's God, whose his God begins, the name of his God begins with the letter L. No, I don't mean Barney Frank and other Illuminati chippies. No, I'm talking about there's far more good people on this earth than are evil, despite the fact that there's many alien hybrids here, despite the fact there are many aliens pretending to look like human beings, and despite the fact there are many soulless clones who look like human beings, and many, many, many people who are under mind control or satanic, demonic, influence that do evil things, but even they can be freed. Everyone can be freed. But if there's the majority of us with positive intention, we can turn around every negative plan they have. So as dark as the scenario is, you know, the concentration camps, the red, the blue, the yellow, this, all of that can be undone through positive thinking, the power of positive thinking and positive intention, and couple the intention with emotion. This, it works far more effectively when you couple an emotion with your stated intent. You can't be, let's say, laid back about this. Now, you can produce emotions, you can produce anger. A lot of people doing this get angry. This is Don Cross' approach. He gets angry. And you amplify the power of the scalar wave by a large factor when you couple it with emotion. But here's another emotion, the emotion of love. Mm-hmm. Love is an emotion. And if you direct the thought out through your heart chakra, which is what Lily Oshesko does, this is Carol Cross' recommendation, project the thought out of your heart chakra, and what you do is you couple the thought with an emotion of love. Now, most of us love somebody, family, parents, wife, pet, work, an idea, a hobby. We all have things that we love. So what we do is we kind of piggyback our love emotion onto the thought, and I project it out the heart chakra, and I literally imagine it as a beam coming out of my heart and then spreading out in an ever-widening cone shape until it envelops the entire earth and then goes beyond out into the universe. Every time I project a thought, I always imagine it spreading out from one point at my heart, but it widens up in a cone shape, and it covers the entire planet, and solar system and out to the universe, and I attach that thought that it's going to permeate everything and everybody in its path. Every thought of every living entity affects every other entity because we are all broadcasters and receivers of thought energy. This is why radionics work. This is what Ruth Drown discovered. Well, she wasn't the discoverer, but she improved the knowledge of it. Actually, Albert Abrams and a Dr. Strong had much more to do with the discovery of this notion that you can both diagnose and treat a patient from a distance. Mm-hmm. Because he learned how to tune in on the scalar waves, which the patient is both broadcasting and receiving. And he developed instrumentation that could essentially isolate that signal, and he could add medicating energies, let's say waveforms, to the signal and send it back to the patient. If anyone wants to do a search under the word radionics, you will see that it is a type of system in which you can both analyze and treat someone for any sort of medical condition from a distance. How are they doing that? What's the communication? The communication is this highway that's constantly in place of thought waveforms that go from any living being to every other living being. And when metaphysical discourse mentions the fact that we're all connected, we are all one, the allusion is to this. We are all, yes, we are all connected. And it's hard to believe physically we appear to be separated, but our thoughts are like bridges to each other.
Yes.
And people who develop the skill can fine-tune their dial, and they can tune in on what a loved one is thinking. It's usually like a mother and a child. They have a strong telepathic bond. But we've talked about it with our animals. I always talk to my cat telepathically. When I want to get him to come in, I go to the front door, and I don't call or whistle. I just hold the image of him running, you know, up the porch and into the door. I have a little movie going on in my head. Within 30 seconds, he comes running from around the building, runs on the porch and into the house, just like I played the movie. And I know you have very intelligent animals that you can telepathically communicate. So we don't really need to talk. I mean, of course, we do talk to them because it's fun. But animals are very, very good receptors of telepathic communications if you give it a chance.
Yes. In fact, my bird right now is telling me that it's time for us to call it a night here.
Okay. Well, you've done it again. You wasted another perfectly good 2 hours.
In the last moment here of the show, give out your website. And, of course, the James Casbolt story can be found under the title of Project Mannequin on your site, right?
Yes. There's a few places. My site is educate-yourself.org, or you can say educate-yourself.org. And when you get to the homepage, the latest information is available on the current news page, and I have a series of words and links that you'll find at the top of every page on my website. And if you go to that link, and the very top row on the far left, it says current news. That's where I put my most recent articles. Now, James Casbolt can be found among those links. He's on the lowest row towards the left side, so you can click onto him there. But once you get to my current news page, I put James Casbolt's information both under featured articles, which once you start scrolling down, you'll see there's a heading there, featured articles. He's right there, James Casbolt. He's also under my latest articles group on the, I posted them October 3 of 2008. So there's three ways you can find them. And once you click on his page, you have access to the six chapters he's published so far in his book. His book is called Agent Buried Alive, it's a 2008 book. And frankly, he's writing the succeeding chapters as he's going. The book is not completed.
Mm-hmm.
He's writing it, and when he finishes a chapter, he uploads it onto his site. All of his information is also on his site, jamescasbolt.com. But I'm reproducing it at my site, so it'll be on more than one site in case they decide to try to take him down. It's good to have these this information spread out over a few different sites.
Well, we can intend, instead of them taking him down, that they all get an enema.
Yes.
And with that, we've got to say goodnight here. You're going to be on next Thursday again.
Yes, I look forward to these Thursday chats.
This was interesting tonight. And
yes, I mean, we never plan it, but it's nice to just let see where the rivers take us on our little raft trip here.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to next week, Ken, and
okay.
I'm going to say goodnight to the folks now.
Okay.
So you have yourself a great weekend, and folks out there, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. Our special guest, Ken Adachi, will be back with us again next week. on Thursday. Be sure to visit his website, educate-yourself.org or educate-yourself.org or educate-yourself.org. In the meantime, special thanks to Don Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, Seth Hendrick for the sound, and this is yours truly, Don Nikoloff, saying I wish you a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.